so. What chance do you think you would have against an army that could defeat this many? Against an army half that size? Chandelin shifted his weight without answering. There are lands, Chandelin, that have no say, like the Mud People and the Bontoc. They are not represented on the council. The larger lands, like this one, and the one that defeated them, are very powerful, yet Dark and Rawl conquered them. I speak for the lands that have no voice on the council. I protect your wish to be left alone and forbid others to come onto your land. Without me to make them afraid and tell them what to do, they would take your land for themselves. You have seen the country we have traveled through. Much of it is difficult to plant. People would take your land for farms and to raise animals. Your sacred grasslands would be burned and tilled and planted with crops to trade for gold. As brave and strong as you are, you would not be able to protect your people. These outsiders would blacken your land with their numbers. Just because you are brave and strong does not mean you will win. The soldiers here were brave and strong, and 100 times your number. And look what happened to them. And this is only one city. There are many larger. Being brave does not mean you have to be stupid, Chandelin. You saw what was done here. How long do you think you could fight against an army like that which did this? Even if every one of your men killed 50, they would hardly notice. You would be like the Jacopo, gone, every last one of you. Kaelin jabbed a finger at her own chest. I am the one who tells them they may not. They do not fear you, but they fear me and the alliance I represent. There are good people in the Midlands, people who are willing to fight to protect others who are less powerful. The dead here are one of those peoples. They are one that has always backed me when I said no land may attack another to gain land. I head the Council of the Midlands and hold together the lands that want peace. Under me they would fight any who would make war on others. Yes, I make people afraid, so they will do what I say, but not to have the glory of power. I hold power to keep the people of the Midlands, including the Mud People, free of oppression. These people here have fought before to keep all the people of the Midlands free to live as they wished. They have fought for you, for your rights, though you have never known of the blood they have shed on your behalf. She clutched her mantle more tightly. You have never before had to fight for them until Dark and Rawl threatened all. I came to the Mud People with Richard to seek help. Your ancestors' spirit saw the truth of our struggle, and they helped us so that Mud People and all others could live free. For the first time, Mud People had to shed blood for the Midlands. Your ancestors' spirit saw the truth of this, and they helped us. The people of the Midlands owe the Mud People a debt for their sacrifice, but you also owe them. Richard with the Temper put his life at risk for your people. He lost loved ones in the struggle, the same as you. He suffered things you could never understand. You could not imagine what was done to him by Dark and Rawl before Richard killed him. Kaelin stood in fury, clouds of her hot breath rising into the cold air. I make people afraid of me, so you may continue to be blind and stubborn. Richard and I have fought to keep all the people of the Midlands, including the Mud People, from being murdered, as the Jacopo murdered Mud People, even though you would deny us your help or simple gratitude. Silence echoed around them. Chandelin walked slowly to the railing, idly running a finger along its polished surface. She watched each slow cloud of his breath dissipate to be followed by another. He spoke softly. You see me as stubborn. I see you too as stubborn. Maybe our father should have also taught us to see that sometimes people do as they do, not because they are stubborn, but because they fear for those they protect. Maybe you and I should be able to see each other not as harsh, but as doing the best we know to keep our people safe. A small smile came unexpectedly to Kaelin's lips. Perhaps Chandelin is not as blind as I thought. I will try myself to see better, see you for the man of honor you are. He gave a nod, and a small smile of his own. Richard with the Temper is not a stupid man. He put his hands to the railing, looking out over the first floor. He said that if he had to pick one man to fight beside him, he would pick Chandelin.
You speak the truth, she said softly. He is not a stupid man.
Richard also sacrificed himself as your mate. He has saved our men from being chosen, as surely you would have picked one of us, because we are so strong." His voice rose with pride. "You would probably have picked me, so that you might have the strongest mate. Richard has saved me." Kaylin smiled again in spite of herself, as he stared out over the railing. "I'm sorry you feel the task of being my mate is so onerous a thing." Chandelin came back to her. He stood a moment, studying her eyes, and then began untying the band at his right arm. He pulled the band and bone knife free, holding it out before her. "Grandfather would be proud to protect you, one of his own, one of his mud people." He flipped her mantle back over her left shoulder.
"Chandelin, I cannot accept this. It holds the spirit of your grandfather."
He ignored her words and tied the band to her left arm. "I have the spirit of my father with me, and I am strong. You fight to protect our people. Grandfather would want to be with you in this fight. You do him an honor." She held her chin up as he slipped the bone knife into the band.
"I'm honored, then, to have your grandfather's spirit with me."
"This is good. You have the duty now to fight as my grandfather fought to protect your people, all of your people." He lifted her right hand and placed it on the bone knife. "Swear to carry this duty in your heart."
"I have already sworn to protect the Mud People and the others of the Midlands. I have already fought and will continue to fight for all of you."
He squeezed her hand tighter to the bone. "Swear to Chandelin." She studied his grim expression a long moment.
"You have my vow, Chandelin. I swear it before you."
He smiled as he pulled her mantle back over her shoulder, over the bone knife. "Chandelin will thank Richard with the temper when I see him again, for saving me from being chosen as the mate to the Mother Confessor. I wish him no bad fortune. He fights, too, for the Mud People, as the Birdman has told us."
Kaylin bent to pick up his mantle. "Here, put this back on. I don't want you to freeze. You must still get me to Adendrill."
He nodded, still wearing the small, tight smile, as he threw the mantle over his shoulders. His smile died as he glanced at the doors. "Someone has been here since this was done."
Kaylin frowned. "What makes you think that?"
"Why did you close the doors after you had looked?"
"Out of respect for the dead."
"When we came to them, they were closed. Those who did this rape had no respect. They would not have closed all the doors. They wanted anyone who came to see what they had done. Someone else has been here and closed the doors."
Kaylin glanced to the door, seeing the meaning of what he said. "I think you're right." She shook her head. "Those who did this would not have closed the door."
Chandelin leaned on the railing again, looking down at the wide stairs. "Why are we here?"
"Because I had to know what happened to these people."
"You saw that outside. Why are we here, in this house?"
Kaylin glanced at the steps leading up to the top floor. "Because I have to know if the Queen was killed, too."
He looked over his shoulder toward her. "She means something to you?"
Kaylin was suddenly aware of the pounding of her heart.
"Yes."
"Do you remember the statues near the door we entered?"
"A woman and a man."
She nodded. "The statue of the woman is a statue of her mother. My mother was a confessor. The statue of the man is a statue of her father, King Wyborn. He was also my father."
Chandelin lifted an eyebrow. "You are sister to this queen?"
"Half-sister." Summoning courage, she started for the stairs. "Let's see if she is here, and then we can be on our way to Adendrill."
Kaylin's heart was still pounding as she stood before the door to the queen's chambers. She couldn't bring herself to open it. It smelled dreadful in the hall, but she hardly noticed. "Do you wish me to look for you?"
"No,"
she said.
"I must see it with my own eyes."
She turned the knob. The door was locked, the key still in place. She touched the icy metal plate.
"This is a lock. The thing I told you of before?"
She lectured as she pulled the key out and held it up.
"This is a key."
Replacing the key, she twisted it with shaking fingers.
"If you have a key, you can open the lock, and then the door."
Someone had obviously locked the door.
out of respect for the queen. The windows were intact, as was the furniture. The room was as freezing cold as the rest of the palace, but the smell made them suddenly gag and hold their breath. Human excrement covered everything in the outer sitting room. The two of them stared in shock. Dark piles dotted the carpet and sat on the desk and table. The blue velvet chairs and couches were soaked with yellow frozen urine. Someone had even squatted neatly in the fireplace. Holding their mantles across their noses, they stepped carefully across the room to the next closed door. The queen's bedchamber was worse. There was hardly a place to put a foot without stepping in it. But as covered as the floor was, the worst was the bed. It was heaped with feces. Delicately painted floral scenes on the walls were smeared with it. If everything hadn't been frozen solid, they would have been driven from the room by the stench. As it was barely tolerable. Thankfully, there were no bodies. The queen was not here. The names on Kaelin's mental roster of who could have done all this fell away, and only one nation was left. The ones who had been at the top before.
Keltons, she hissed to herself.
Chandelin was dumbfounded. Why would these men do this? Are they children who do not know better? After a last look around, Kaelin led them back out into the hall, locking the door once more, at last taking a full breath. It's a message. It's meant to show their disrespect for the people who lived here. It says they have nothing but scorn for these people and anything that's theirs. They've soiled their foes' honor in every way they could think of.
At least your half-sister is not here.
Kaelin snugged the thongs of her mantle tight at her neck. At least there is that. She descended the steps, pausing to look once more at the closed doors on the second floor. Chandelin watched her after he, too, glanced to the row of doors. She sought to fill the silence. We must go and find Prindon and Tassadin. His face was lined with ire. Does this not make you angry? She realized only then that she was wearing her confessor's face. It would do no good for me to show my anger right now. When the time is right, you will know just how angry I am. Chapter 30. In a cramped dub-and-wattle house next to the hole in the city's wall, Kaelin watched as Chandelin built a small fire for her in the central pit. The two brothers were nowhere to be seen. Warm yourself, he said. I will see if Prindon and Tassadin are close, and tell them where we wait. After he had left, she drew off her mantle, even though she knew it wasn't a good idea to get too used to the warmth because it would only make the cold seem worse later. Drawn by the lure of the fire, she squatted close, rubbing her hands together over the flames, shivering as the warmth seeped into her bones. The small room was one of only two that had been a large part of some family's world. The table was broken, but the crude bench sitting against the wall was not. A few pieces of clothing were scattered about, along with bent tin plates and a broken spinning wheel. Three bobbins were crushed into the dirt floor. Kaelin retrieved a dented pot from among the rubble, deciding it was easier to use it than to unpack one of their own. She heaped it full of snow from outside the door, placed the pot on three stones in the fire, then warmed her icy fingers again, finally pressing them against the cold flesh of her face. There was tea in a crushed canister in the corner, but she instead pulled her own from her pack while she waited for the snow to melt and the men to return. Try as she might, she couldn't get the faces of the dead young women out of her mind. Several times she added snow as that in the pot melted down. As the water was just starting to bubble, Prindon came through the door. He leaned his bow against the wall and, with a sigh, slumped down heavily on the bench. Kaelin stood and glanced to the empty doorway. Where's your brother? He should be here soon. We took different ways back to be able to look at more tracks. He craned his neck, looking through the doorway into the second room. Where is Chandelin? He went to find you and Tassadin. Then he will be back soon. My brother is not far. What did you find?
More dead people.
He didn't seem to want to talk about it at the moment, so she decided to wait until Chandelin returned with Tassadin before questioning him. I was just warming water. We'll have some hot tea.
he nodded, flashing her his handsome smile. It would be good to have hot tea.
Kaelin bent over the pot, shaking tea from a leather pouch with one hand and holding her long hair back from her face with the other.
You have a fine-looking bottom,
came his voice from behind.
She straightened and turned to him. What did you say?
Prindon pointed toward her middle.
I said you have a fine-looking bottom. It is a good shape.
Kaelin had learned not to be startled or insulted by the strange customs of different peoples of the Midlands. Among the mud people, for example, a man complimenting a woman on her breasts was the same as saying she looked to be capable of being a fit and healthy mother, able to nurse her future children. It was a compliment that brought smiles of pride from the flattered woman's family, and was a sure way for a suitor to make friends with her father. At the same time, asking to see a woman with the sticky mud washed from her hair was likely as not to raise drawn bows. It was tantamount to asking the young woman for improper favors. The mud people treated matters of sex in an especially casual manner. Kaelin had more than once been brought to blushing by Wesselin's unexpected and cavalier descriptions of coupling with her husband. Worse, she was as likely as not to do it in his presence. As she stared at Prindon, the visions of the young women's faces, too, floated before her eyes. Though Prindon had not complimented her on her breasts, it seemed to her that a woman's hips could be construed to carry the same maternal compliment. She knew he meant no disrespect, but still, his beaming smile made the hairs on her arms stand on end. Maybe it was just the inappropriate timing, with the dead all about, that unnerved her, but he hadn't seen the dead young women. Prindon's smile faded only a little as a frown came to his brow.
You look surprised. Doesn't Richard with the temper ever tell you how fine your bottom is?
Kaelin fumbled for words, not sure how to bring this to an honorable halt.
He has never mentioned it specifically. Other men must have told you this before. It is too fine for them not to notice. The shape of your body is very good to look at. It fills me with desire to...
He frowned in puzzlement. I don't know your word for... Blood went to her face in a red rush as she took a step toward him.
Prindon!
She relaxed her fists and brought her voice back in check.
Prindon, I am the mother confessor.
He nodded, his grin returning, but not quite as confident.
Yes, but you are a woman, too, and your shape... Prindon!
He blinked at her as she ground her teeth. In your land it may be proper to speak to a woman in this fashion, but in other places in the Midlands it is not. In other places, speaking in this manner is offensive, very offensive. More than that, I'm the mother confessor, and it's not proper to speak to me in this way.
His smile vanished. But you are now one of the mud people. That may be true, but I'm still the mother confessor.
His face blanched.
I have offended you.
He leapt up from the bench and fell to his knees before her.
Forgive me, please. I meant no disrespect. I meant only to show my favor for you.
Her red face glowed in embarrassment. She had done it now. She had humiliated him.
I understand, Prindon. I know your words are harmless, but you must not speak this way outside your land. Others would not understand your ways and would be greatly offended.
He was nearly in tears.
I did not know. Please say you forgive Prindon.
He clutched at her pants and gripped her upper thighs with his powerful fingers.
Yes, of course. I know you meant no harm.
She took hold of his wrists, pulling them gently from her legs.
I forgive you.
Chandelin came through the door, his face set in a grim cast. He took a quick glance at Prindon before looking up into her eyes.
What is this?
Nothing. She hastily helped Prindon to his feet as his brother entered the room. But we're going to have a talk about the proper way to speak to ladies in the Midlands. There are things you three will need to be taught to keep you out of trouble. She smoothed her pant legs and the lingering sting of where Prindon's strong fingers had been, and then straightened herself.
Tell me what you found.
Chandelin cast a withering glare at Prindon.
What have you done?
Prindon took half a step back, diverting his eyes.
I did not know it would be wrong. I told her she had a fine...
I said it was nothing, Kaelin said, cutting him off. It's just a small misunderstanding. Forget about it. She turned to the fire.
I made hot tea. Get some cups. There are some we can use on the floor over there.
and we will have some tea while you tell me what you found." Tossadin made for the cups, thumping the back of his brother's head along the way, adding a whispered reprimand. Chandelin shrugged off his mantle and squatted before the fire, warming his hands. The brothers brought the cups, Prindon rubbing the back of his head, and passed them around. In an attempt to let them all know Prindon hadn't lost any honor in her eyes, Kaelin directed her attention and first question to him. "Tell me what you found." Prindon glanced briefly at the other two before setting his face with a serious expression. 10, maybe 12 days ago this killing was done. The enemy came mostly from the east, but there were many, and some came from farther to the north and south. They had war in the narrow places in the mountains with men from this city. Those men from the city not killed ran away, as they were overrun, and gathered their numbers here, and tried to make a stand. While they ran to here, they were chased by their enemy, fighting and dying as they ran. More and more of the invaders poured through the passes, sweeping around to the south here, where they had a battle. After they defeated those men and killed the ones they captured, the enemy came through the wall. When they were finished in this city, all of them together went east again. Tossadin leaned in a little. "Before they left, they took their dead from the city. They used wagons. There are many tracks from the wheels. It took them maybe 2 days to take all their dead from here. Many thousands. The people here must have fought like demon spirits. The ones who did this lost more men than they killed." "Where are the bodies?" she asked. "In a bowl in a pass to the east," Prindon said. "The wagons took the dead along the road, and then they were thrown down into the low place. They are piled so deep, we do not know how low the ground is there." "What did they look like?" She took a sip of tea, holding the tin cup with both hands wrapped around it, soaking up the warmth. "How were they dressed?" Prindon reached under his shirt and pulled out a folded cloth. He handed her the blood-red bundle. "There were poles with these on them. Many of the men wore clothes with the same symbols on them, but we did not want to take the clothes from the dead." Kaelin unfolded the banner and stared in shock at the long red triangle draped over her hands. In the center was a black shield with an ornate silver letter on it. The letter R. It was a war banner, with the shield and symbol of the House of Rahl.
"Daharan soldiers," she whispered.
"How could that be?" She looked up.
"Were there Keltons, too?"
The three men looked at one another. They didn't understand. They didn't know the Keltons.
"There were some with other clothes," Prindon said, "but most had this symbol on them, or on their shields."
"And they went east?" Tossadin nodded. "I do not know the way to tell you their numbers, but there were so many that if you stood in the same spot on the wide road they took, you would be there all day watching them pass."
"Also," Prindon said, "as they were going, others joined them, from the north where they had been waiting, and went with them."
Kaelin's eyes narrowed as she frowned and thought. "Did they have many wagons, big wagons?" Prindon snorted a laugh.
"They must have hundreds. These men do not carry anything. They use wagons. They have victory because they are many. But they are lazy. They ride in wagons or use them to carry their things."
"It takes a lot of supplies," she said, "to support an army that big. And if they ride in wagons, it keeps them fresh for fighting."
"It also makes them soft," Chandelin said defiantly. "If you carry what you need like we do, then you grow strong. If you walk without carrying what you need or ride in wagons or on horses, then you grow soft. These men are not strong like us."
"They were strong enough to crush this city," Kaelin said, looking up from under her eyebrows. "They were strong enough to win the battle and destroy their opponent."
"Only because they are many," Chandelin argued, "like the Jacopo, not because they are strong or good fighters."
"Large numbers," she said quietly, "has a strength all its own." None of the three men disagreed with that. Prindon downed the last of his tea before speaking.
"Their numbers are all gone now. They stay together as they go east."
"East?" She thought a moment, while the three waited.
"Did they go through a pass that has a thin rope bridge stretched above it? A bridge that can only be crossed by one person at a time on foot?"
The brothers nodded. Kaelin stood.
"Jara Pass," she whispered to herself as she turned to stare out the door.
It's one of the few big enough for their wagons.
There is more, Tassadin said as he stood too. Maybe 5 days after they left, more men came here.
He held up the spread fingers of both hands. This many did the killing here.
He closed all but a lone little finger on his right hand. This many came after it was done.
Kaelin glanced to Chandelin.
The ones who closed the doors. He nodded as the two brothers frowned.
They searched the city, Tassadin went on.
There were no people left here to kill, so they followed the tracks, followed those that went east to join with them.
No, Kaelin said. They were no allies of those who did this. They didn't go to join them.
They're going after them, though.
Prindon considered this a moment.
Then if they catch the ones who did this, then they too will die. They have no numbers like those they chase. They will be like fleas trying to eat a dog.
Kaelin snatched up her mantle and flung it around her shoulders. Let's get going. Jara Pass is wide and easy enough for large wagons, but it's also very long and meandering. I know small passes, like the one that takes the rope bridge over the Jara, and then up through Harpy's Cleft, that an army cannot travel, but we can, and it's much shorter. What they travel in 3 or 4 days, we can travel in one.
Chandelin stood, but did so in an easy manner.
Mother Confessor, following these men will not take us to Adendril.
We have to go over one of the passes to get us to Adendril. Harpy's is as good as any.
Chandelin still made no move to recover his mantle.
But that way lies an army of thousands. You wanted to get to Adendril with as little trouble as possible. That way lies trouble.
Kaelin squatted with her boot over a snowshoe and began lacing on the binding. The faces of the dead young women wavered before her eyes.
I'm the Mother Confessor. I will not allow this to happen in the Midlands. It is my responsibility.
The men glanced uneasily at one another. The brothers moved to retrieve their snowshoes. Chandelin did not.
You said your responsibility was to go to Adendril as Richard with the Temper asked. You said you must do as he asked.
Kaelin paused her work at the binding of the second snowshoe. Anguish seared through her. She considered Chandelin's words, but only briefly.
I'm not abandoning that responsibility.
She finished the binding and stood.
But we're mud people. We have other responsibilities, too.
Other responsibilities?
Kaelin tapped the bone knife that was tied to her arm under her mantle.
To the spirits, the Jacopo, the Bontoc, and now these men have listened to spirits that would have them do great evil. Spirits that come through the tear in the veil. We have responsibilities to the spirits of our ancestors and their living descendants.
She knew that to close the veil she needed to reach Zed, to get help for Richard. It was possible that Richard was the only one who could close the veil. Chandelin was right. They must reach Adendril. But the faces of the young women still filled her mind. The horror of what had been done to them still coursed through her. The two brothers were sitting on the bench putting on their snowshoes. Chandelin stepped closer to her and lowered his voice.
What good will come of us catching this army? It is wrong.
She looked into his brown eyes. They were not filled with defiance, as they had been in the past, but with genuine concern. Chandelin, the men who did this killing and went east, are perhaps 50,000 strong. The ones who closed the doors in the palace and are chasing that army are perhaps 5,000. They are filled with anger, but if they catch the ones they're chasing, they'll be slaughtered too. If I have a chance to prevent 5,000 men from dying, then I must try for that chance.
He lifted an eyebrow. And if you are killed in this, then what greater evil will break its bounds?
That's what you three are supposed to prevent, my being killed.
She started for the door. Chandelin gently gripped her arm and brought her to a halt. He spoke calmly.
It will be dark soon. We can rest here tonight and cook food. We can leave in the morning, after we are rested.
The moon will be up soon to light our way. We have no time to waste.
She leaned toward him.
I'm going on now. If you're as strong as you say, you'll go with me. If you're not, you may rest here.
Chandelin put his hands on his hips. His lips tightened as he let out a deep breath. He appraised her with frustration.
You cannot walk more than Chandelin. We go too.
Kaelin gave him a quick, tight smile and swept through the door.
The brothers snatched up their bows and jumped to fall in behind her while Chandelin bent to tie on his snowshoes. Chapter 31 Richard watched the horses eating grass that wasn't there and scratched his itchy beard. The surface of the valley was baked and barren, but the horses seemed contented in their grazing, as if there were lush green grass beneath their feet. Illusion, it seemed, deluded and enticed even the horses. He wondered what wasn't there that he was going to see. Sister Verna at last moved, pulling up on Jessup's lead line, pulling him away from his browsing. This way. Ominous dark clouds hugged the ground ahead, boiling as if alive and eagerly awaiting them. Richard pulled the other two horses on, following after the sister. She had told them that they must walk because the horses could be suddenly spooked by things unseen and could carry them helpless into a spell. Sister Verna abruptly altered her course across the featureless ground, taking them a little to the right. The dark cloud of dust and dirt lifted and tumbled, driven by the gusts that, as of yet, didn't touch them. Sister Verna looked over her shoulder, her expression as dark as the cloud. Whatever you see, you ignore it. Whatever it isn't real. You just ignore it. Do you understand? What am I going to see? She redirected her attention to the way ahead. Her white blouse was damp with sweat, as was his shirt. I can't tell you. The spells seek those things in your own mind you fear or long for, so everyone sees different things. Yet some visions are the same. Some fears are the same in all of us. Some of the magic we will see is not visions but real, like those clouds of dust. And what did you see the last time that you're so afraid of? She walked in silence for a time. One I loved. If she was a loved one, why would you be afraid to see her? Because he tried to kill me. Richard blinked at the stinging sweat in his eyes. He? Do you have a man you love, sister? She watched the ground as she walked. Not anymore. Her voice was soft with sorrow. She glanced up at him a moment before seeking the ground once more with her eyes. When I was young, I had a love. Jedediah. She was silent, so he asked, He is not your love anymore? She shook her head. Why not? Pausing only a moment, she wiped her brow with a finger before moving on. I was young. Perhaps younger than you when I left the Palace of the Prophets, left to find you. We didn't know if you had been born yet. We knew that if you had not been, you would be. But we didn't know when, so three sisters were sent. But that was many years ago. I've spent better than half my life away from the palace from Jedediah. She stopped again, peering first right, then left, before starting ahead once more. He will have long ago forgotten me and found another. If he really loved you, sister, he won't have forgotten you and found another. You haven't forgotten him. She gave a tug on her horse's line, pulling him away from something he wanted to investigate. Too many years have passed. We've grown older apart. I have grown old. We are not the same people we were. He is one with the gift and has his own life. It would not include me. You're not old, sister. If you really love each other, time shouldn't matter. He wondered if he was talking about her or himself. Sister Verna gave a soft private laugh. Youth. Youth holds much hope, but not much wisdom. I know the ways of people, of men. He has been too long from my skirts. He will long ago have sought another. Richard felt himself blushing in the heat. Love has more to it than that. Ah, so you know so much of love, yes? You, too, will soon be searching the charms of a new pair of pretty legs. Richard was about to vent a rush of sudden anger when Sister Verna stopped. She looked up. The dark cloud swirled in, closing in on them. From somewhere, Richard heard the faint sound of someone screaming his name. Something is wrong, Sister Verna whispered to herself. What is it? She ignored him, pulling Jessup to the left. This way. Lightning hit the air about them. A blinding bolt struck the ground ahead, sending a shower of the chalky earth skyward. The ground shook with the impact. Every muscle flinched from the nearness of the strike. When the lightning tore the dark wall open for an instant, Richard saw Kaelin. She was standing, watching him.
and then she was gone.
Kaelin?
Sister Verna reversed course.
This way, now. Richard, I told you, it is not real. Whatever you saw, you must ignore it.
He knew it was an illusion, but the sight ran a sharp pang of longing through him. He groaned inwardly. Why did the magic have to attract him with visions of her? His own mind, Sister Verna had said, would bring forth the things he feared, or those for which he longed. Which was this, he wondered, fear or longing? Is the lightning real? Real enough to kill us. But it's not lightning in the sense of what you know. This is a storm of spells that are battling each other. The lightning is a discharge of their power as they fight each other. At the same time, it also seeks to destroy any intruder. Our way is among the gaps in their battle. Again he heard the distant scream of his name, but it wasn't Kaelin's voice. It was a man's voice. Another lightning bolt struck directly in front of them. He and the sister both protectively threw an arm up before their faces. The horses didn't start. It must be as the sister said. Horses would have panicked had it been real lightning. As the dirt thrown up by the lightning rained down around them, Sister Verna turned and snatched him by his shirt sleeve.
Richard, listen to me. Something is wrong. The way is shifting too fast. I'm not able to feel it as I should be able to.
Why would that be? You've been through here before. You were able to do it before.
I don't know. We don't know a great deal about this place. It's tainted with magic we don't entirely understand. It could be that the magic has learned to recognize me from when I was here before. Going through more than twice is not possible. Going through the second time is said to be more difficult than the first. It could be just that. But it might be something else.
What something else? You mean me? Her eyes glanced past him to things she was seeing, but he knew weren't there. She refocused her gaze on him.
No, not you. If it were you, I would still be able to feel the pass as I did before, but I can't. I can only feel it some of the time. I think it's because of what happened with sisters Elizabeth and Grace.
What do they have to do with it? The dark storm was all about them now, swirling and howling. Their clothes flapped in the gusts. He had to squint against the dust.
In their death, they passed on their gift. That is the reason they gave their lives when you refused the offer, to pass their gift to the next, to make her stronger so she might succeed at the next try.
That was why he had felt the pull to accept the collar more strongly each time the offer had been made. Kaelin had said that that might have been the reason they killed themselves when he refused, to add to their power, make them stronger.
You mean you have the power, the Han, of the other sisters?
She nodded as her eyes darted about.
It gives me the power of all three.
Her eyes came back to his.
It could be that I have too much power to make it through.
She clutched his shirt tighter and pulled him closer to her face.
If I don't make it, you must go on alone. Try to make it on your own.
What? I don't know how to make it through. I don't feel anything of the spells about us.
Don't argue with me. You felt the lightning. You felt that much of it. One without the gift would not feel it until it was too late. You must try.
Sister, you will be all right. You will sense the way.
But if I don't, you must try. Ignore anything you see that tempts you. Richard, if I die, you must try to make it through to the Palace of the Prophets.
If anything happens to you, I'll try to make it back to the Midlands. It's closer. She gave a sharp tug on his shirt.
No! Must you always challenge what I tell you?
She scowled at him a moment before letting her expression cool.
Richard, if you don't have a sister to teach you to control the gift, you will die. The collar alone will not save you. You must have a sister for the Radahan to be of use. Without a sister, it would be like having lungs, but no air to fill them. We are the air. Some of us have already given our lives to help you. Don't let them die in vain.
He took her hand from his shirt and gave it a gentle squeeze. You're going to make it, I promise you. You'll make it. If there is anything I can do to help, I'll try. Don't be afraid. Ignore what you're seeing. Isn't that what you said? She released an exasperated breath and then took her hand back, turning away.
You don't know the things I see.
She looked over her shoulder, squinting at him.
Don't test me, Richard. I'm not in the mood. You do as you're told.
Richard heard the thunder of horses' hooves as Sister Verna quickly led them ahead. The darkness swirled around them as lightning crackled through it. He found it difficult to accept the calmness of the horses. Could it be that
that he really was using the gift to feel it? To his left, the wall of dust lifted. Light beyond shone through. Richard stared at the sight. It was the Heartland Woods, the woods he knew, longed to return to. They were here before him. He had only to step through. The peace of the place he stared at made him ache with longing, as if stepping through to them would be his salvation. But he knew it was an illusion, a spell of longing meant to trap him and let him wander for all time in ensorcelment. He wondered what would be so bad about that, even if it wasn't real. If it was a place he loved and he would be happy there, what would be so bad about that? He heard his name called again, again in a scream. Horses' hooves were almost upon him. He spun around, realizing it was Chase's voice screaming his name.
"Ignore it, Richard," came the sister's growl. "Keep moving."
Richard longed for his friend as much as he longed for the Heartland Woods. He walked backward, watching. Chase was riding at a full gallop, his black cloak flying behind, his weapons glinting in the light of the merciless sun. The horse was covered with lather. Someone else was with him in his lap. Richard squinted, trying to see better, and realized it was Rachel. That was natural. Rachel would be with Chase. Rachel was screaming his name, too. Richard watched the illusion as it bore down upon him. Something about Rachel riveted his attention. Something about her gave Richard the strong sense of Zed's presence. His eyes were lured to an amber stone hanging by a gold chain about her neck. The sight of the stone drew Richard's interest, as if it were Zed himself calling to him.
"Richard!"
Chase was screaming.
"Don't go in there! Don't go in there! Zed needs you! The veil is torn, Richard!"
Chase suddenly drew the horse to a skidding stop. Richard took slow, backward steps as he watched the illusion. Chase had gone calm and was no longer screaming. With Rachel in his arms, he dismounted, looking about in wonder. The dust was passing between them again, and Richard was having difficulty seeing his old friend. Chase set Rachel down and took her hand as they both turned about, staring off at nothing. Richard thought that an odd thing for a vision to do, but then decided it must just be a way of trying to entice him to go see what they were looking at. Richard turned to the sister as she called his name.
"Come on, or I'll make you wish I had left you here. You mustn't stop."
She surveyed each side as she moved ahead.
"This opening is closing around us. Hurry before we're trapped."
Richard glanced behind. The vision was disappearing beyond the swirling darkness. Chase and Rachel appeared to be walking off toward something. The roiling clouds passed between Richard and the vision of his friends, and they were gone. Richard trotted to catch up with Sister Verna. He wondered at the reason for such an odd vision. Why would the magic pick those two from his mind to tempt him? They had seemed so real. It had felt as if he could have reached out and touched the two of them. Perhaps the magic was trying to seduce him into following someone he trusted with his life. But it had seemed so real. Chase had looked so desperate. He cautioned himself to pay attention. Of course it seemed real to him. That was the whole purpose of the magic, to appear real in order to fool you. To draw you in. It wouldn't be very effective magic if it didn't seem real. Richard put a hand to Jessup's flanks as he came up behind him to let him know he was there and keep from startling him. He ran the hand along the length of the muscular horse as he trotted by, pulling Bonnie and Geraldine along by their lines in his other hand. Richard gave Jessup a pat on the neck as he went past. Jessup dropped his head and once again browsed at grass that wasn't there, his lead line dragging the ground. Richard froze in his tracks. Sister Verna was gone. Lightning exploded in every direction with deafening noise. A bolt blasted the ground at his feet. He leapt to the side to avoid the next strike. His hair seemed to stand on end as the lightning hit. He could feel the searing heat. His vision was laced with blue-white afterimages of the jagged flashes. Richard screamed out the sister's name as he gathered up the lead lines, pulling the horses on, as he frantically scanned about. The lightning seemed to follow him, striking the ground repeatedly, where seconds ago he had been. Balls of flame ignited in the air, shrieking as they came apart. It seemed as if the very air burned. The wail of the fire was everywhere.
Richard ran toward the gaps left after each dissipated, dodging the lightning and the flames, covering his head with a hand, even though he knew that if the magic hit him, that hand wouldn't save him. The cacophony seemed enough to drive a person mad. The dark dust clouds prevented him from seeing anything, if indeed there was anything to see. He ran on, heedless of direction, just trying to avoid the blue bolts and yellow flames. Abruptly, the corner of white polished marble walls loomed up before him. Lurching to a panting halt, he looked up, but couldn't see the top. It disappeared into a dark cloud above. A strike that was too close for comfort started him running again, pulling the three horses behind. The middle of the wall had an arched opening in it. Rounding the corner, he found that that wall, too, held an arched opening. As he ran, he counted. Each of the five sides of the structure was about 30 strides. In the center of each wall was an arched opening 6 strides wide, and about as tall. He stopped, catching his breath, outside one of the openings. It was empty inside, and through the opening he could see each arch in the other walls. Lightning hammered the ground, flinging dirt into the air. He threw his arm up in front of his face. The strikes marched toward him, their sound thundering in his ears. He had nowhere to go. He let go of the horses and dove through the arch, rolling across the sandy ground inside. Silence echoed in his ears as he sat up, leaning back on his hands. Inside the structure was barren, empty. The air wasn't sweltering, as it had been outside, but felt almost cool in comparison, and smelled sweet, like a grassy meadow. Through the arched openings, he could see the boiling black clouds that hugged the ground. The lightning arced violently, but its sound was only a dim rumble. The horses wandered slowly, grazing on the grass that wasn't there. This must be one of the towers of perdition Sister Verna had told him about. The interior of the walls soared up into the darkness high above, and were black with the results of wizard's life fire. Richard ran a finger through the black grit and tasted it. He winced at the bitter tang it left on his tongue. The wizard who had died to give his life to this fire had not done so willingly. He had done it to save himself the torture of what they had intended to do to him, or perhaps what they were doing to him. The ground was covered with white sand that sparkled with prismatic light. It was drifted into the corners like snow. Richard remembered seeing sand like this before. It was in the people's palace, in the Garden of Life, in a circle in the center of the room. Dark and Rawl had drawn spells in that sparkling white sand when he had been trying to open the boxes of Ordin. Richard paced around the inside of the tower, trying to decide what to do. It seemed safe in this place, but for how long? Surely, sooner or later, the magic would find him. Maybe the seeming safety of this place was simply an enchantment meant to trap him, keep him here for all time, afraid to venture out. He couldn't stay. He had to find the sister. She needed his help. She was afraid. He had told her she would make it through. But why should he want to help her? She kept him a prisoner. If he left her here, he would be free. But free to do what? If she didn't help him learn to control the gift, he would die. Or so she said. Richard turned at a sound from behind. Kaelin stepped out of the darkness of an archway. Her long hair didn't flow over her shoulders, but was tied back in a single braid. Instead of her white confessor's dress, she wore the red leather of a moored Sith. Richard stood stiffly, his chest heaving. "Kaelin, I refuse to think of you in this way, even in an illusion drawn from my own mind." She arched an eyebrow. "But isn't this what you fear most? Change it or be gone!" The red leather shimmered and became the white confessor's dress he knew so well. The braid came undone. "Better, my love. I'm afraid it still won't save you. I have come to kill you. Die with honor. Defend yourself." Richard drew the Sword of Truth. The unique ring of its steel echoed throughout the tower. Wrath surged through him as the magic was loosed. He endured with detached misery the sensation of murderous need while looking upon the face of the only person who made his life worth living. His knuckles tightened on the braided wire hilt, on the bumps of the word, truth. His jaw muscles flexed as he gritted his teeth.
He felt a rush of understanding at how the wizards could have made life fire and have given themselves into it rather than endure what was to be done to them. Some things were worse than death. Richard tossed the sword to the ground at Kaelin's feet. Not even in an illusion, Kaelin. I would rather die. Her green eyes shone with a sad, timeless, knowing look. Better you had died, my love, that you wouldn't see what I have come to show you. It will bring you more pain than death. Her eyes closed as she sank to her knees, leaning forward, bending into a deep bow. The whole of the time she was slumping forward, her hair shortened. By the time her head touched the sparkling white sand, her hair looked as if it had been chopped short, close to the nape of her neck. This must be, or the Keeper will escape. Stopping it will aid him, and he will have us all. Speak, if you must, these words, but not of this vision. Without looking up, she spoke in a detached rote. Of all there were, but a single one born of the magic to bring forth truth will remain alive when the shadow's thread is lifted. Therefore comes the greater darkness of the dead. For there to be a chance at life's bond, this one in white must be offered to her people to bring their joy and good cheer. As Richard stood staring at the illusion, at the back of her head, a ring of blood blossomed around her neck. Richard's breath halted. As if it had been cleaved off, Kaelin's head tumbled away. Her body fell to its side, blood gushing, spreading in a pool beneath it, turning the white sand and white dress to red. Richard drew a gasp of breath.
No!
His chest heaved. He felt his fingernails cutting into his palms, his toes curled in his boots.
It's an illusion, he told himself as he shook. An illusion, nothing more. An illusion meant to terrorize him.
Kaelin stared up at him with flat, dead green eyes. Though he knew it had to be an illusion, it nonetheless was working. Panic paralyzed his legs. Fright raced recklessly through his mind. The image of Kaelin wavered and then vanished suddenly as Sister Verna stormed through an archway to the side.
Richard!
She shrieked in fury.
What are you doing in here? I told you to stay with me! Can't you follow the simplest instructions? Must you always act like a child?
She took two strides forward, her face red with rage. His heart thumped violently with the pain of what he had just seen. He blinked at Sister Verna. He was in an ill humor to tolerate the surly side of her disposition.
You were gone. I couldn't find you. I looked, but don't talk back to me.
Her curls sprang up and down as she yelled.
I've had all the talk from you I can stomach. I told you I was in no mood for it. My patience is at an end, Richard.
He opened his mouth to speak, but the collar yanked him backward, his feet leaving the ground. It felt as if he had been jerked by a rope around his neck. With a grunt, he slammed into the wall. The impact knocked the wind from his lungs and the sense from his head. He hung, his feet clear of the ground, pinned to the wall by the Radahan. The collar was choking him. He tried to focus his eyes, but his vision only blurred uselessly.
It's time you had a lesson I should have given long ago,
the sister said in a growl as she stalked toward him.
I have suffered enough of your disobedience. I will suffer it no longer.
Richard struggled to breathe. Each breath burned as he drew it through the constriction at his neck. His vision cleared and finally focused on Sister Verna's face. His anger heated.
Sister, don't!
Pain took his words. It ignited in his chest with such intense burning force it made his fingers tingle. He couldn't draw a breath to scream.
I've had enough of your words. I will hear no more. No more of your excuses, your arguments, your harsh judgments. From now on, you will do as you are told, when you are told, and you will offer me no more of your insolence.
She took another step toward him, her expression twisted with menace.
Do we understand each other?
She somehow made the pain worse. He shook with a crushing hurt in his chest. Stinging tears flooded from his wide eyes.
I asked you a question. Do we understand each other?
Air rushed into his lungs.
Sister Verna, I'm warning you. Don't do this, or... You are warning me. You are warning me.
White hot
pain knifed through his chest, twisting tighter with each breath. A scream ripped from his lungs. His worst fears were coming to life. This was what wearing a collar had brought him to again. This was what the sisters had in mind for him. This was his fate, if he allowed it. Richard called the sword's magic. Summoned by its master, the power swept into him, hot with promise, hot with wrath, hot with need. Richard welcomed it, embraced it, letting his own rage join with the rage of the sword and spiral through him. His fury consumed the pain, using it to draw power.
"Don't you dare fight me, or I will make you rue the day you were born!"
Fiery flames of agony bloomed anew. Richard drew them into the wrath. Though he wasn't touching the sword, he didn't need to. He was the one with the magic, and he called forth all its force now.
"Stop this!"
he managed through gritted teeth.
"Or I will!"
Sister Verna, with her fists at her side, stepped closer.
"Now you threaten me? I warned you before about threatening me. You have made your last mistake, Richard."
Though he was nearly blinded by the pain she suddenly unleashed into him, he was able to see one thing, the Sword of Truth. It lay in the sand near the sister. The Seeker focused the sword's magic into the power that bound him to the wall. With a loud crack, the bond broke, and he tumbled away from the wall, rolling through the sand. His hands found the sword. Sister Verna charged toward him. He came up swinging the sword in an arc. The need for her blood seared through his soul beyond retrieval. Nothing else mattered. Bringer of death. He didn't try to direct the track of the blade, but simply focused his need to kill into the power of its swing. The sword's tip whistled through the air. Bringer of death. The blade exploded through the sister at shoulder level. The cool air erupted with a spray of hot blood, the smell of it filling his nostrils as the sight of it filled his vision. Her head and part of her shoulders tumbled up into the air as the blade severed her in two. Blood and bone hit the walls. The lower half of her body collapsed fluidly to the ground. Blood soaked into the white sand, spreading beneath her. What was left of her shoulders and head hit the ground a good 10 feet away, sending up a spray of white sand. The gore of her insides glistened in a line away from the body. Richard collapsed to his knees, panting, the pain finally gone. He had told himself he would not allow this to be done to him again. He had meant it. Like a distant memory, his insides ached with the pain of what he had done. It had all happened so fast, before he had had time to think. He had used the sword's magic to take a life, and the magic would want its due. He didn't care. It was nothing to compare to the pain of what she had been doing to him, or what she would have done to him. As he focused on the rage, the pain evaporated and was gone. But what was he going to do now? He needed the sisters to teach him how to keep the gift from killing him. He would die without Sister Verna's help. How could he go to the other sisters and ask for their help now? Had he just sentenced himself to death too? But he would not allow them to hurt him anymore. He would not. He knelt, recovering, resting on his heels, trying to think. In front of him, near the side of Sister Verna's body, lay the little book she had kept tucked behind her belt. It was the little book in which she was always writing. Richard picked it up and thumbed through the pages. It was blank. No, not entirely. Near the back, there were two pages with writing. "I am the sister in charge of this boy. These directives are beyond reason, if not absurd. I demand to know the meaning of these instructions. I demand to know upon whose authority they are given. Yours in the service of the light, Sister Verna Soventrine." Richard reflected on the fact that Sister Verna had been temperamental even in her writing. He looked to the next page. It was in a different hand. "You will do as you are instructed or suffer the consequences. Do not presume to question the orders of the palace again. In my own hand, the prelate." Well, it looked as if Sister Verna had managed to raise the ire of someone besides himself. He tossed the book back on the ground next to her. He sat staring at her body, at what he had done. What was he going to do now? He heard a sigh and lifted his head to see Kaelin, in her white confessor's dress, standing again in an archway. With a sad expression, she slowly shook her head. "And you wonder why I would send you away?
Kaelin, you don't understand. You don't know what she was going to... A quiet laugh drew his attention to the other side of the room. Darkin Rall stood in another archway, his white robes aglow. Richard felt the scar of his father's handprint on his chest tingle and burn with heat.
The Keeper welcomes you, Richard.
Darkin Rall's grim smile widened.
You make me proud, my son.
With a scream, Richard tore across the sand. The rage ignited anew. Sword first, he launched himself at Darkin Rall. The glowing form evaporated as Richard flew through the archway. Laughter echoed, and then faded. Outside the tower, the lightning went wild. Three hot bolts traced through the darkness toward him. Instinctively, he lifted the sword as a shield. The lightning struck the sword, flashing and twisting like a snake in a snare. Thunder jarred the ground beneath his feet. Richard squinted against the blinding light. He gritted his teeth with the strain of forcing the sword downward, taking the flaring liquid lines of fire with it. They dulled and diminished as they were dragged to the ground, where they writhed, hissing as if in death, until at last they faded and were gone.
Enough of these visions!
Richard angrily sheathed his sword and collected the horses from their grazing. He didn't know where he was going to go, but he was getting away from this tower, away from the dead sister, away from what he had done.
Chapter 32. The lightning didn't come anymore. The clouds still roiled around him, but the lightning didn't come. He walked without giving thought to where he was going. When he felt inexplicable danger, he skirted it. To the sides, visions tempted him to look, but he stoically ignored them. Almost not seeing it at first, because of the dark clouds, he came upon another tower. It looked like the first, except it was a glossy black. At first, thinking he would avoid it, he found himself walking to one of the arches and peering in. The ground inside was covered with sand that was drifted into the corners, the same as the last tower, but it was black instead of white. It glimmered with the same prismatic light as the white sand. Curiosity overcame caution, and he reached inside, running a finger through the black grit covering the walls. It tasted sweet. The wizard who had given his life into this fire had done so to save another, not to save himself torture. This wizard had been altruistic, the other ignoble. If having the gift meant he was a wizard, Richard wondered which kind he was. He would like to think of himself as high-minded, but he had just killed another to save himself from torture. But was he not within his rights to kill to protect his life? Must he wrongly die to be honorable? Who was he to judge which of these wizards had been wiser, or which had done what was within his rights? The sparkling black sand fascinated him. It seemed to draw light from nowhere and reflected about the inside of the tower in winking colors. Richard retrieved an empty spice tin and scooped it full of the black sand. He tucked the tin back in his pack, hanging from Geraldine's saddle, while he whistled for Bonnie. She was off browsing again. Her ears swiveled toward him as her head came up. Dutifully, she trotted over and joined him and the other two horses, pushing her head against his shoulder in hopes of a neck scratch. As they left the tower behind, he gave her the scratch she wanted. His shirt was soaked with sweat as he hiked quickly across the barren ground. He wanted to be out of this valley and away from the magic, the spells, and the visions. Sweat rolled from his brow as he walked, trying to ignore familiar voices that called to him. He ached with desire to see the faces of loved ones who called his name, but he didn't look. Other voices hissed with menace and threat, but he kept moving. At times, the spells tingled against his flesh, burning with pricks of heat or cold or pain, and he rushed away from them even faster. As he wiped sweat from his eyes, they focused on the baked earth before him, and he saw tracks, his own. He realized that in trying to avoid the feelings of danger, the visions and the voices, he must have been walking in circles, if in fact the footprints were real. He began to have the queasy feeling that magic was trapping him. Maybe all this time he had been walking, he had not been making any headway out of the Valley of the Lost. Maybe he too was lost. How was he going to find a way out? He tugged the horses on and kept moving, but with a rising sense of panic. Unexpectedly, out of the dark fog before him came a vision that startled him into a dead stop. It was Sister Verna. She was wandering aimlessly, her hands clasped prayerfully, her eyes skyward,
and a blissful smile upon her lips. Richard staked toward her.
"Be gone! I've had enough of these specters. Leave me alone!"
She didn't seem to hear him. That was impossible. She was easily close enough to hear him. He stepped closer, the air feeling abruptly thick and sparkling around him as he did so, until he seemed to step beyond it.
"Do you hear? Listen to me, I said, be gone!"
Distant brown eyes focused on him. She held her arm out, her hand held up in forbidding.
"Leave me. I have found what I seek. Leave me to my peace, my bliss."
As she turned away, Richard felt an apprehensive tingling sensation all the way down to his toes. She wasn't trying to entice him, as the other visions had. His hair tried to stand on end.
Sister Verna?
Could it be true? Could she be alive? Maybe he hadn't really killed her. Maybe it had all been a vision.
Sister Verna, if it is really you, talk to me.
She regarded him with a puzzled frown.
Richard? Of course, Richard.
Go,
she whispered, as her eyes turned up once more.
I am with him.
Him? Him who?
Please, Richard, you are tainted. Go away.
If you're a vision, then you go away.
She regarded him with pleading.
Please, Richard, you're disturbing him. Don't ruin what I found.
What have you found? Is it Jedediah?
The Creator,
she said in a hallowed tone. Richard peered skyward.
I don't see anyone.
She turned her back to him and strolled away.
Leave me to him.
Richard didn't know if this was the real Sister Verna or an illusion, or maybe the dead sister's spirit.
Which was true? How could he tell?
He had promised the real sister that she would make it through, that he would help her. He followed after her before she could disappear into the dark fog.
What does the Creator look like, Sister Verna? Is he young, old? Does he have long hair, short? Does he have all his teeth?
She turned in a rage.
Leave me!
The menace in her expression froze him in his tracks.
No, listen to me, Sister Verna. You're coming with me. I'm not leaving you trapped in this spell. That's all you see, an enchantment spell.
He reasoned that if she was a specter, and he took her with him, she would vanish when they left the magic of the valley. If she was real, well then he would be saving her. She would be alive. Though he wished to be free of her, he wished more that she was alive, and that she wouldn't really do to him what she had done back at the tower. He didn't want that to be the true Sister Verna. He started toward her again. Her hand came up, as if to push him, even though he was a good 10 paces away. The force of the impact threw him to the ground. He rolled over, clutching his chest, clutching at the receding agony. It felt like what had been done to him in the tower. Hard, burning pain. But it faded faster. Wincing, he sat up, quickly gathering his wits as he gasped for breath. He looked up to check where the sister was in case she was about to hurt him again. What he saw halted his breath only half out of his lungs. As the sister once again stared skyward, the dark fog around them swirled and coalesced into forms, the forms of wraiths